You look just like I did at your age.
Please don't say that, Dad.
I'm 16 years old. I'm not a child.
Don't you take that tone of voice with me, young lady.
Love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
You're listening to Honey, We Made a Disney Podcast. Two friends since first grade now, dads reliving the Disney movies we grew up on with our kids. I'm Eddie Ferguson.
And I'm JB Wagner. And on today's episode, we are taking a break from our normal walkthrough of our childhood Disney movies. And we're going to review the newly completed Disney Plus miniseries, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Or as it's really called, we'll get to that in a second. So, Eddie, how are you and the kids doing?
We're doing fantastic. My life has been consumed recently with the theme song for Finn McMissile.
Ooh.
We yes.
I know it.
You know it well. We realized, okay, we can't. He wants to watch Cars on repeat.
He's hit all the three Cars of them. Phase. This is a big milestone in a boy's life.
So we were like, this isn't good. So what we've resorted to is like, okay, listen, you can't watch the movie that, like, we'll maybe let him watch it once a week, if that. But what we do allow him to do is we'll turn on the soundtracks and let him play with his cars to the soundtrack. But the problem is, like, he's now really focused in on the Finn McMissile. Like, he just wants to listen to that one song over and over. And he runs around the basement here with his little Finn McMissile and his Tow-Mater and his Lightning McQueen. Adorable. And they're running away from spies, and he's jumping on the couches, and it's all coming across. But as we go places and stuff, he's always asking, we listen to Finn McMissile? We listen to Finn McMissile? So it's stuck. I walk around all day now going, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun- a catchy little
bit. It is. It's this. Oh, I know it by heart now. We go through the, and so my son knows it's Cars 1. He knows that that's Cars 2. That's Cars 2. And then there's Cars 3 or Cruise Car. That's Cruise from Paris.
We listen to a lot of soundtracks. That's I just love listening to soundtracks all the time. And he now can tell you at what moment in the movie that particular.
Yes. So isn't that crazy?
It is crazy because the song will come on and he'll be like, oh, they tip tractors. Oh, you know, like, fun. Oh, my gosh, how in the world? But yep, he knows them all. And it's all the movies that he watches. Like, we'll listen to Moana or you name it. He knows all the moments of it. So, yep. So that's what it shows you the power of music.
Power of music. Not that we needed any convincing, especially if you've listened to this podcast much at all. We
love music.
We kind of do there quite a bit.
Which this show that we are reviewing today does some really interesting little tricky stuff with the different themes and stuff.
Interesting.
We'll have to hop into that a little bit.
Yep. So that is what like we listened up at the top, like we talked about at the top. We are taking a little bit of a break from our normally scheduled program as we walk through from 1988 through 2005, our childhood of movies, because there's some amazing new shows that Disney is always coming out with, and especially these MCU or Star Wars series that it deserves its own time, not just like an update, but like to really give it some of its own time for us to talk about, because we know you probably love it too if you're listening to this podcast. So as we said today, we are going to be talking about in depth the entire series of season one, maybe the only season, we don't know, of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Cue the Disney sound effect.
Okay, IMDb. This is the IMDb description for the series. Okay. Following the events of Avengers Endgame, Sam Wilson / Falcon and Bucky Barnes / Winter Soldier team up in a global adventure that tests their abilities / and their patience. Got a lot of slashes in here. I got to explain who everybody is. I feel like this is the beginning of every single one of these Marvel, like WandaVision, now this.
Following the events
of Avengers Endgame. Every single one of them are do this. Now, they didn't give almost
anything away
plot-wise. Nothing. For this thing. No bad guys, no whatever. It's just their adventure. It's going to test their abilities and their patience. It's like, okay, you literally gave us nothing other than these are the two characters. And then Mike and Annoyed.
And that it is after Endgame, not before it.
Not before
after Endgame. After it.
Immediately
Which I following. Guess, I guess is important to note because we have Black Widow coming up, which is obviously
pre-Infinity War. I forget. Does this go between Civil War and... I think it goes between Civil War and the last one. So I'm pretty confident.
I do not know.
We'll have to look it up when it comes out. So Eddie, what was this on the top of your list? When we were leaving Endgame, were you like, of all the characters in this group, I really want to see Bucky and Sam on a buddy cop movie?
Well, I have to say, I have found Sam Wilson to be one of the most interesting and compelling characters of the MCU for me.
Do tell.
Like, since he appeared in Captain America and the Winter Soldier, I have just, I've just really liked him. I find him to be a very relatable character, I enjoy the characters that have no natural superpower unto themselves, but their own kind of natural intuitions and whatever kind of hardware they've got alongside of them, you know, that type of thing. I just enjoy superheroes that are more human like that. And so I find him that way. And I find him very empathetic, and I also find him very hilarious as well. He's just got some great dry wit throughout them all. So yeah, I've just always connected with him and enjoyed him. And so when this was coming out, I was excited. I've never particularly connected with the Bucky Barnes Winter Soldier character between Winter Soldier and Captain America Civil War. I just kind of felt like they never allowed depth to develop there. This definitely changed that. I was excited for Sam, to be honest, and the whole kind of Falcon character as a whole.
I was definitely... Gotcha.
The opening...
Yeah, the opening was great.
It delivered.
The opening sucked you in immediately. I was definitely on the far other end of going into this. Like, neither of these characters, I'll say this, as good guys, were people that I was like super excited about. Sam kind of felt like he was basically Cap's wingman, literally the wingman. and then we'll come back in later. The entire time, and he kind of felt like a yes man. Okay, I'm just doing whatever Steve Rogers is telling me to do, kind of a thing. He didn't really have much character development or expression. He was just that other guy. They tried to give him a little bit of fun, playfulness in the Ant-Man when he fights Ant-Man in the first Ant-Man movie. But overall, I just wasn't that intrigued by him or his character. I really loved Winter Soldier when Captain America's Winter Soldier came out. I was like, yes, this bad guy looks awesome from the moment you see his metal arm, catch the shield in that one of those first trailers, and his theme music was amazing.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes. Right after he turns, but even like inside of Civil War, when he gets kind of reactivated by Daniel Brühl's character, by Zemo, there was definitely so much like, oh, this is intense. But anytime he's just been one of the guys, it's been mostly in that, like in Civil War and or Endgame when he's in there for a little bit, like you kind of, he gets lost in the mix. And then he comes back in at the very end. But I just, these two people, I was just not that interested in. I thought it was going to be one of the lesser. Okay. No. So that was just like me coming into it. I wasn't totally on board. I was basically on board because this was another MCU series and WandaVision was so good. So,
see, I immediately flashed back to the scene of them sitting in the Volkswagen Beetle in Captain America Civil War. Like when this series was announced, I immediately just saw that sequence of them sitting there. And I was like, they've got a fun tension and friction in that relationship. But
it was
only one
scene. It was, but there was a lot in that. I know it was layered, but
they had two solid beats in that little solid, that scene right there. Like the whole, like, can you scoot your seat forward?
No.
And no, not of course. And then when Cap and Carter kiss and they both have kind of these just very subtle, weird kind of thumbs reactions up. as these two dudes are sitting there watching it. I just like, okay, there could be more there. There was a lot of potential in the moment when I first saw that movie. Not in my wildest dreams did I think like, oh, we need a series of these two guys. But when the series was announced, I'm like, okay, I remember that sequence. There's something to build off of there. There's a chemistry between those two characters that could be really interesting. So here we are with one of the longest titles of a series. Anytime something has a lot of articles in it, I'm just always like, oh.
Articles. The blank. A title. And the blank.
Blank. Yeah. So, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. We alluded to this before. I feel like it just like literally took off from the very beginning. That opening sequence of The Falcon and the helicopters and flying and all of that. That was on par, if not higher, than some of the sequences we've seen him in the movies. Which just really, again, set the stage that these series, these Marvel series on Disney Plus, really are not TV series.
They are just
a sequence of short movies.
They're longer. Yeah, they're long. It's just a longer film that's broken up.
Yeah, which really opened that up.
So jumping into it, I think it took me a few episodes, like other than like some of those action sequences that were really, really good. I think some of the storyline stuff, anything pertaining specifically to the two of them, took me several episodes to kind of get into. Anything with the psychiatrist was kind of ridiculous. I think I was talking to someone else and like, she was a horrible psychiatrist. Like, why? She should not be paid to do any. No one should ever pay her to do anything. She's just terrible at her job. Come to find out, a lot of those scenes, they literally just told them to ad lib a lot of that stuff, which is why it's kind of disjointed a little bit. And mostly it's her than anything. Like, her, it's like, you don't feel official. You don't feel like a real psychiatrist at all. They kind of played it more with the putting their, like, legs near each other and stuff like that. But
I liked this. So, I mean, episode two, when they are there together and the whole, that was the scene when I started to empathize a little bit more with Bucky.
Cause he goes off and like,
well, and Captain he makes Rogers the revelation stuff. Of like, if Steve was wrong about, remember he has the line about like, if Steve was wrong about you, then he was probably wrong about me too. Yeah. That was kind of an interesting step forward for the characters. And I think especially for Bucky, that's when I started to, connect with him, believe his trajectory a little bit more.
Yeah. Overall, the moment, the turning point for each of them, it was definitely independent for me, that kind of carried the intrigue for me for this show, was every moment that we got with John Walker. Because you had that, even though Carly is the quote unquote, like the villain in this entire thing, John Walker was what the moment I first saw him with his helmet and that chin strap squishing his face, I hated his living guts. And I was just like, I'm invested in your demise from the moment I saw him carrying the shield at the very end of episode
first
one,
episode. Yeah.
All the way through. And even in, when you get near the end where he's got his like comeuppance, like I was like, there needs to be something more here. And we can talk later on if he really did get fully that or what they're trying to set up with him in the end. But I, he kind of, anytime we had an interaction with him, like that's where I was like, my ears are perked up, like, especially near the beginning of this series. I think near the end, they kind of transformed it, but the last few episodes, but yeah, John Walker's character as fake Cap was one of the most like visceral things I'd felt in a while.
When do we give the spoiler alert? I'm assuming if you're listening to this, you've already seen it, and this will spoil some stuff for you.
I mean, we probably need to just go ahead and do it right now.
Yeah, so spoiler alert.
Should have put something near the front of like, just don't listen to this episode if you haven't watched the whole series.
His movement, his character arc, may be the most compelling of the whole series. I kind of need to sit on it a little bit more, but I think you're right. Like they purposefully, the way they introduce him at the end of the first episode and the whole, it just doesn't fit like his,
right.
Like you said, like it's like squishes his face, the face mask.
It seals it.
Yeah. You're like,
out there and you've seen the memes of the grandpa from Up wearing.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
It looks like that.
Then you get the second episode, which is really interesting, where they kind of like he has his appearance on Good Morning America and there's the marching band and everything. And they really,
the locker room beforehand.
Yeah.
Too, they really tried hard to make you like see him as a real person. But
yeah,
I
started to like, you're like, I don't want you to be Captain America.
I refused.
But I refuse. Yes.
I almost said out loud. Still, no, you will not make me like him.
And I think that's what they're trying to do, right? Is they want you to feel that. They want you to feel that tension of like, I don't like him. I don't want him to be Captain America. But it's like, oh, I can't. A 3-time, you know, Medal of Honor winner. Like, he's done all this like, oh, he's actually he could be a Steve Rogers-esque guy, but I don't want him to. I don't. No. There's no way. Like I just felt that tension the whole until you have the sequence where they fight with the Falcon and Winter Soldier on the moving semis down the road. After that moment, I'm like, yeah, I don't like him. I feel no more tension of this. It's just for that brief little moment there at the beginning of the second episode that you're kind of like, ooh, and then no.
See, for me, I could immediately read what from the moment they have him in the locker room, I was like, I see exactly what you're doing, Kevin Feige. I know exactly what you're doing, and you will not get me. You will not make me feel for this guy, which I know then compromise it. Like I'm not I probably wouldn't be the normal person of just like other people might not be as invested, but there was something about just the way he looked at the episode one where it's just like anything from now on, I know, just no, not at all. You will not get me. And it really took all the way through up until watching. So last night, cause it aired last night, watched it, but I watched all the other episodes I had rewatched. I think 4 of the episodes I had rewatched, or 3 of them, a couple times, like twice. So last night I watched episodes 4 and 5 again, and then straight into 6 that had been released. And I then was able to finally, after all this time, be able to go, let me just see him as the character they're expecting, like that they're trying to portray for us, not just my own feelings about him. And I started to go, okay, I can now see, okay, yes, he had trauma in battle. There is some level of trying that he's doing, but at the same time, he's coming at it from the worst possible the worst possible way of ego and trying to live up to some idea that he has for himself and basically demanding, I've been given this, I deserve it, mentality, yeah. which nobody appreciates. So the, and going back through, I can kind of start to sympathize. I'm giving it a 5% more, 10% more than I did when I first saw it.
There's some notable moments. You know, you've got the when they're in the like this internet cafe, I don't know what to call it, and he starts pushing around the guy and he's just like, do you know who I am?
You
and
you start to am?
Yeah, you start to see that aggression just kind of peek through a little bit.
They twisted him up tight.
Yeah.
Round him up tight.
I mean, who's the actor who plays him again? He did such a fantastic Wyatt. Job. Yeah. I mean, there was just this slow build up and it just expanded perfectly as a character where you've got that moment, which is just this little release of pressure. And then it is bookend with probably one of the most like visually just stunning moments that I'm struggling to think of others quite like it in the whole MCU, where you have him holding the shield with blood dripping off the bottom of it, and him having, instead of using it as a defensive instrument, he has now crossed the line and used it as an attacking weapon. To, you know, I'm guessing decapitate that guy.
And he looks kind of deranged.
Yes, yes.
He's got I don't really fully understand what I just did, but I'm going to try to move on.
The way they framed it with kind of from the ground up. I mean,
blood on the shield is like closest to you. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, it was such a like gut-wrenching moment. And I can't think of too many other moments where just that, just the visual, because they hold that scene, that shot for a while, in of itself was more moving than anything. Because I don't know if you feel for his buddy, you know, that wasn't there as much. It was more just kind of like, oh, that symbol is now tarnished.
Yep.
And then to come to the very end of the series,
where I don't know how they did it.
Where you do start pulling for him.
I don't know if pulling for... somehow they took him from that moment in literally in less than two... like in basically two episodes... or yeah, two episodes from this... basically, he's been fully realized as who the guy was. It's like a deranged, like egotistical psycho.
Yeah.
To then... I think because of the fact that they immediately, it was really important that the very first scene of the next episode, they had him, Bucky and Falcon, take the shield immediately.
Yeah.
Because if he was just left on his own and he was just running amok, it would have been a lot harder. I think because he has his comeuppance immediately afterwards to where they've literally physically taken it from him and he's now at his lowest point.
And then you have him go before the Senate panel or whatever, and they strip him of his title and everything.
And he's basically out of commission for that entire fifth episode.
But you have
that's the only moment. That's the only way they can set up the ending where he comes back in and he has a good turn, kind of. Like,
well, chooses to save the truck instead of revenge on Carly.
But you still get the end. So can we just talk about the ending with him specifically?
Okay.
Before
we get there, we have to come up. We have to talk about one of the greatest actresses to be added to the MCU that I had no idea. Going to be in this. And as she's walking up and they don't show her for a while, and then even when they show her face, I'm like, is that Julie Louis-Dreyfus? Oh my goodness, it is. I loved the addition of her, the small little moments that she's in there, which is very little.
Yep. She steals it.
Is fascinating. She steals it. And apparently she's supposed to be in Black Widow.
Interesting.
So I'm curious. Yeah. So I'm curious what this would have felt like if we would have gotten the original.
Did not know that.
Order that, you know, if the pandemic hadn't happened, we would have seen Black Widow a year ago prior to seeing that moment. So, no, that was an interesting revelation that really kind of sets John Walker up to be this anti-hero. You know, he's not good or bad.
He's the full gray character that Carly and her teammate were talking about, where we don't have the black and white, which is kind of some of the reason that my wife, especially after the S.H.I.E.L.D. moment in episode 4, kind of was out on this series, because it was too much like graying of all the waters, like having Captain America kill somebody with the S.H.I.E.L.D. That was, she was like, I know that he's not the real guy, but the symbol killing, like, she was now kind of out after that. She kind of, we still watched some of the other ones, but I could tell she was just like gone. But he is the full realization that he's kind of in this weird Loki zone without being as lovable as Loki. Like, Loki has some very serious Loki stands that out there that just like adore him. And, but he's still that, we kind of need him around, I guess, like, but we also think he's interesting and stuff. Like, John Walker is now fit into that. They kind of said, okay, I was hoping he would have a demise, be done, whatever. Like, really, even after Bucky and Sam fight him, I felt like, oh, I want a little bit more. I really want him to be just done. And now they've turned him into something else where he is now, oh no, he's going to be around for a while and he's going to be that guy. Yep. We're like, flipping.
He's Walker, U.S. agent.
U.S. agent now.
He's U.S. agent.
So I'm interested to see where he comes in at.
I've done enough YouTube video digging to learn that this was the same path he went on in the comics, which is hopefully setting up some other kind of films or teamings and stuff like that. But overall, I think for this series, find his story arc to be one of the more compelling.
Yes.
I think Bucky, there's a little bit of payoff there at the end. I just felt like they dragged it out too long, and there wasn't enough substance to it in the end. It's just like, oh, I'm going to go back to this guy's apartment and tell him that I'm the one who killed his son. I wanted a little bit more there. I wanted a lot more development, where I felt like with Sam, we got this really interesting journey where I almost felt like this was the Falcons TV show. This was Sam Wilson's show.
They just
tagged him on.
Yeah. They did a good job of kind of giving us those hints, even in episode 2, where you kind of, I wondered, was Bucky going to take it? Was Falcon going to take the lead? And they set it up well, because they kept on having Bucky say, "What you should have taken the S.H.I.E.L.D." It wasn't like, we need the S.H.I.E.L.D. It's like, you should have taken the S.H.I.E.L.D. Always kind of pushing Sam, like, you were always supposed to be the heir apparent to Steve, based on, this was Steve's wish. And so they did a good job of, like, even though Bucky was right there next to him, even in like having second billing on the title of this, they did a good job of always, you never like, no, it's not going to be Bucky taking the S.H.I.E.L.D. in the end. I would, so like I said at the front, like, kind of on the fence, or not really on the Sam train for majority of his time in the MCU, and even in the beginning of this was kind of all over the map. But episode 4, I mean, it's just a huge episode for the entire series of their legacies. But Sam had his first, I feel like his first non-action, or even just any moment in the MCU, his peak. He really set himself apart when he's talking with Carly. When they're debating with each other after the funeral, that's where he had his first, I feel like, big moment when he like catches her. Is like, oh no, you made me say that. He was like, he got her. And that was that first like, oh, he did really good in this like, it's almost like hostage negotiation style moment. That I was like, okay, you've now had your big first moment. I felt like, even though he's had like cool things, like this was his first like character moment where I was like, oh yes, okay, you've now put your stamp on it. You've hit that game winning three pointer for this game. Okay, I'm feeling that there's a different level you're at now.
I heard one guy say that Sam's superpower is empathy.
I would agree.
And that you see his background as a counselor, as a trauma counselor, really that's his skill set. And that scene shows that. It makes me even wonder as I say this now, like, did they purposefully make that Bucky's counselor awful so that you see how good Sam truly is?
I had no idea. That is a great wow. You should take credit for that moment if you're not.
I want to.
Else. Yeah.
I want to ask, but because I think from that moment on to his final scene with, you know, he's in full new Captain America regalia. How does he fix the problem? It's not mediation. By superpowers. It's not by fighting. It's by mediation. It's by counseling people, right? And maybe I have a professional connection there because I spend my days counseling people.
Were you taking notes and like, I can see him using...
Do I have it? Is this my superpower? What? No, but... And I think he's got a couple of moments like that in the other films that I've connected with. Especially he helps Steve Rogers process a lot of different things like that. You just see that power
and his entrance into
the empathy of connection. Yeah.
His second big scene, and I know that we got the first opening scene where you've got Cap running circles and it's the on your left moments. But then his second scene is when he's counseling veterans. So that was the first little nugget of it. But you're right. Even when he's fighting Carly at the end, and it's really her fighting him, and he's just blocking. He's not. She's like, fight me. Like, and he wasn't even the one to take her down in the end. It was Sharon Carter coming in at the very end, which is a whole nother thing we need to talk about right after this. But yeah, I loved his, what they did with his suit when he finally gets that full suit at the very end. That was an awesome reveal. I wasn't expecting them to actually bring back the wings because I didn't know anything about on the comic either. Stuff, but the way that they had the wings and then how he had the place for the shield on the back that fit perfectly to protect himself from the flipping, from the helicopter, just like bounces right off of it, which was kind of funny. But no, loved his final full in his moment, having his moment with all these people. It was really good.
Yeah, and I think it we've got to kind of talk about how this series sets in current history. And the events of the past week and even the events of the past year.
It's very, yes. I that's think, very interesting that this show comes out like the, it finishes just days after the Derek Chauvin, court case. They finally like verdict and everything like that.
Yeah. To watch the journey, I mean, to include like the Isaiah Bradley character, yep. To help understand not just that he's the new Captain America, but even understanding him as Captain America as a black man.
Yep.
The way that they walk through that is so, again, it's empathizing. It helps you recognize the difficult path that he, not just himself, but that others have had to walk to get to this moment, and that there's still difficulty to move forward. And that's why I really loved the ending where they kind of, we've gone back to the Captain America Museum so many times.
Yep. We're season ticket holders now by this point.
Yeah, yeah. Like, even as it first appeared, I'm like, no, don't go back to the museum. And I thought they were going to, like, show some random picture on the wall or whatever. But to, like, tuck behind the, you know, corner or wherever and be like, actually, no, there's now a whole exhibit about you and a statue and, like, an inscription that explains everything that had happened. And that was moving for me. I mean, and there's nothing, I think one of the YouTube videos that I was watching, the guy was like, there's nothing will get you like an old man crying. And I was like, yep, that's true. Mm-hmm. So to see Isaiah Bradley just kind of really moved by that. I don't know. I felt like Marvel did a masterful job of walking through the true human issues that are at play in the racial tension without getting overly political about it.
They didn't have any statements that are like supposed to be rallying cries or something.
No, which was, I think it serves better. This is how art should help us deal with cultural conversations. Don't get overly political. Don't shove a political agenda or position at me. Just help us feel the human condition. Yes, this revealed the true human condition that is happening in our country through the eyes of Sam and Isaiah, and I thought it was really well done.
I was wondering, all the way up until we finally see him in episode 5, I was wondering if they were going to bring Isaiah back into this. I figured they did because they got a bigger actor to play that. It wasn't just like a no-name person. Loved him from his time in the Alias series. That actor, but when they bring him back in episode 5 and they start leading you down this path of maybe he's not going to take up the shield, maybe he's going to follow the advice of Isaiah. And then he has that moment at the end where he's just like, no, I'm going to go after this. Like when he has the whole montage, which we love montages, playing with the shit, like practicing with the shield,
all the flips
you can handle. And then you're like, okay, no, he is going to do this. Wow. He's going to really take this up. I feel like they did such a great job, like kind of leading you one direction, then bringing you back on that specific thing. But we have to talk about, I know we're going to pivot a little bit. We have to talk about Sharon Carter for a little bit.
Yes, we do.
It was her initial entrance into it was like, whoa, she's in, cause I didn't know she was going to be, it was like, oh, she's in this, and oh, she's a different person now, and she's had this like catastrophic thing happen to her. She's now kind of become a different person, but also straddling that line of familiar, but still doing different things. But then after a few episodes of her, you're like, I bet you she's really the power broker. Like for me, at least, I was like, I think she, like, there's no other new characters they're introducing on that if they had someone else random, I know other people were saying it was Zola or come back from the dead or something like that. I was like, no, she's the only one that makes sense. So it wasn't that big of a deal when they actually announced it. Cause I was like, I could see this coming.
So Sarah had a very intriguing observation.
Okay.
Carter never calls herself the power broker. And she never accepts that she is the power broker. The other two characters just make an assumption that she is
I've heard that.
They are making. So I'm not convinced that she actually is the power broker. I think she is still like the front man for the power broker.
It's good to keep hope alive, Eddie. It's good to keep hope alive.
I don't think she's actually the power broker. But again, what we have created here is a gray character. We have this anti-hero that's going to play both sides, that's going to kind of float in the middle, especially now that she's, you know, reinstated at her post in the CIA. And you got that whole ending scene where she's pretty much, you know, immediately like, okay, I've got some new stuff we can sell off.
It would be interesting because my wife was very sad when realizing that she was going to be bad. She was like, they couldn't do that to Sharon Carter. And what about the legacy of her grandma as well, or Aunt Peggy, Aunt her Aunt Peggy. There's so many kind of sad things about her kind of switching sides in this case. If it was switching sides, I guess you're right. She is another gray character in a different way than John Carter is, because we kind of know exactly who John Carter is now. He's about himself. And yeah. He's about his title and about having his, like, whatever.
John Walker.
Sorry. Sharon Carter. Yeah, you're right. She still has some mystery about what's really going on. I'm interested to see is it going to be the Captain America 4 that they're going to bring her back into and make her a bigger part of? I'm not totally sure about what the next films are going to be. So, but you're right.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, like, how they pop up.
Mm-hmm. I mean, basically from the moment she gets into the car at the end of episode 3, when they're with Zemo, which we didn't spend any time talking about Zemo yet. You're right. She is still in that weird, like, she's playing a bunch of different sides here. Is she really the one running this thing? Is she a double agent? Is she CIA? Oh, right. Now she is officially a double agent, CIA and something else. She hired Bat-Truck, but it was also to help somebody, like herself, because she was going to, like, there's so many different things. I guess maybe that's what she's just going to be. Like, it's going to be a while till we have any sort of conclusion on her. You've talked me into it, Eddie. You've talked me into it. She may not be the power broker after all. I'll say it.
I think there's enough mystery and intrigue there that they're going to develop that out quite a bit. Speaking of mystery and intrigue, you're right. We have not talked about Helmet Zemo yet. I got to say, the second they threw him into the mix with Sam and Bucky, it clicked. Like, they needed him as kind of that third element to make that whole thing. Yep. Like the sequences where it's the three of them kind of on a European road trip, it was far more compelling for me.
What
the Italy trip, and then they do the Spain trip as well.
Yep.
Where they just sit at dinner and do all their impressions.
Michael Caine impressions.
No, it's not like that.
I don't like that.
I love Daniel Brühl, like everything that he has ever popped up in. He is one of those actors that I don't know is in a movie. And then when he, like, pops on the screen in the middle of the movie, I'm like, oh, he's in this. You know, it's just like, oh, yay, this is... I'm going to like this character. It's going to be a compelling character because he's just a fantastic actor.
Oh, goodness.
So do you think I'm assuming you did the same thing for this series that we both did for WandaVision, which is after every episode, immediately hop on YouTube and watch Screen Crush.
Screen Crush, yep. Man, they do. Yes, such a good job. He did a good job that after episode 9 or whatever, the second to last episode of WandaVision, and they didn't have one up for it, I was actually mad that they didn't have it. And I think it came out the next day or something like that, and I was like, why did you guys do that to me? But no, every single one of these, it's like immediately turn on the all the nuggets. It's super interesting. It's like helpful, and it's like it doesn't give too much away. I think maybe WandaVision, because they did talk about what's her name quite a bit, Agnes, throughout. So maybe they did give that kind of away, but these guys are so smart.
Well, and I didn't grow up reading all the comic books, so I don't have that kind of encyclopedia mind of those storylines, but it's intriguing. Like, I'm, oh, okay, this is that connection. Like, I like how he's making those connections for me, and I don't have to spend all the time reading the comics and getting brought up to all of that. It was really funny. I can't remember what episode of this series that I watched the Screen Crush without Sarah. Like, we had finished the episode and she was like, I'm really tired, I'm going to go to bed. Yeah. And so she went to bed and I watched it without her. And the next day she was like, you watched the Screen Crush about that episode without me? And I'm like, oh, I didn't know that I was... Okay, sorry. That's awesome. Now I know I'm contractually obligated to watch
this with you. Contractually obligated. That's awesome.
So his whole theory about Zemo starting some type of like the Dark Avengers or the Thunderbolts is really intriguing to me. you know, kind of the Marvel version of the Suicide Squad.
Yes.
I did
enjoy how on all of his, on all the stuff I've been reading, nobody has making that direct connection because nobody wants to say MCU or is following the anti-hero whole stories after Suicide Squad has already come out. It's kind of like when Apple releases a product. Yes. It's kind of like when Apple releases a product that feels like, I feel like Android's had this for a couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nobody wants to say it.
No one wants to say it out loud because they're afraid of the wrath of Kevin Feige coming on them. But it is. I was like, oh, you mean like Suicide Squad? But hopefully done better than the Suicide Squad.
Well, that's what's interesting about this. All right. So we've talked a lot about this whole gray anti-hero kind of character. That's been DC's lane.
Yep.
Like that has been the movies
that's their home turf.
Is the anti-hero, the Dark Knight series, right? So it is interesting that Marvel is starting to creep over to that side. And it makes me wonder, like, how much influence did Deadpool have on that? Influence did like the acquisition of Fox and now kind of having that side of things available? I don't know, but it is a good evolution to the MCU now that we've had three full phases of just kind of your shiny, glimmery heroes.
Yep, yep. Any other final?
Is there anyone we've missed?
Any person?
You had the Joaquin Torres character that apparently is setting up for him to be the new Falcon. We'll see.
He's okay. He's kind of forgettable.
I think in the new Captain America movie, we will see him. I think he'll pop up. You saw this weird brief appearance of Rhodes at the first episode?
Yeah, yeah, opening stuff.
I think it was just kind of like, oh yeah, don't forget he's in the MCU because we're gonna do a series about him next. I think that was the only purpose.
Oh, they're gonna get a Don Cheadle series?
Yeah,
or movie or something.
What is it? I can't remember the name of the series.
We didn't spend any time on Carly Morgenthau.
Armor Wars is the next series. Okay. And
we didn't spend any time talking about Carly Morgenthau, played by Erin Kellyman. She also was in the the Han Solo biopic, basically as a very similar character of leading a rogue group of people who actually have a noble cause. They basically like, oh, we liked what you did in Solo. Let's just move you over here. I think she did a good job. Although I think by the end, near the end, especially in this last like scene, it felt a little bit easy how much they were like the moment she kind of turned and went full bad. She kind of lost a little bit of steam. I feel like
Think we had enough internal confliction at the opening episodes. Like, I didn't feel like she was really conflicted on her path in the beginning.
Well, so conflicted. She's not really conflicted in the front because they're not necessarily killing people. They're just out there like trying to help the cause. And it really starts. I mean, she has her turn in the middle where she blows up the building and then just doubles down. But it felt the more like she doubled down on the violence, the less I believed it.
Right.
Not believed it, but just like it lost a little bit of her heroic intent. I guess maybe they didn't want it to be too gray on her. It's like, no, I mean, because she is fully a gray character in this, but they kind of needed her to be worse so that when she was killed, she didn't become like an icon. Like she went too far, I guess. But she did lose a little bit. That's why she was so good in Solo, because she was like, the whole time I've got this noble cause. That we're trying to do, and you want to help her. I guess that's the problem, is they couldn't make you want her completely. Like, you had to be like, with Sam, I believe in your cause, just not the way you're doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. I love her as an actress. I just felt like the writing didn't give her enough room to flex there. I don't know what else to say about her. I thought It was an interesting storyline of like, okay, what do we do with the people who did come back from the blip? Like that, I thought that was fascinating that we're not just like, oh yeah, that happened, let's move on.
Because it was 7 years?
5 years. 5 years.
It took me a while. It was a little muddled in what exactly they were doing because I don't feel like they set it up well enough of, we're talking about the people that stayed, that were still here in the blip, that maybe they were in bad situations. They in poverty, let's just say poverty. These people then, now that half the world is gone, was able to live in the homes and et cetera of people who were gone. So now their level of status in society had gone up. Their level
their livelihood
had gone up. Everything. The people come back 5 years later to people living in their spots. So what the GRC or whatever decided to do was go after the people who were still here for five years that didn't get blipped, put them into internment camps and give the people who blipped back their lives. There was some of that just wasn't, that could have been done better to set up that problem more specifically, because I was just like, always like, wait, what is going on here? Yes, who are we talking about?
The Screen Crush guy did a good, his explanation was really good on this. They did too much telling and not enough showing.
Yeah.
And I wonder if this is a result of the fact that production got interrupted by the pandemic, that they just weren't able to film the things that they had wanted to film.
Also, it seems like there was more having to do with a pandemic / like vaccines. They had these vaccines in the first episode that they never talked about again.
They cut that. There was going to be this whole subplot of a pandemic that they cut out because it was a little too close to home.
Yep. It's that muddled it.
But they should have shown that a lot more.
But like people getting pulled out of the homes,
the refugee camps, a lot more. But I appreciate that about the MCU is now in Spider-Man Far From Home, WandaVision, and this, we're actually dealing with the complications of half the world being gone for 5 years and then all of a sudden back. Yep. And what does that look like? You know, Spider-Man, you get kind of the funny teenager tropes of it.
Kid comes back and he's a lot bigger, whatever.
And then here you get like the very serious geopolitical issues that, I think it's interesting that they tackle that and they don't just brush over it.
Yep.
So.
Well, any final words from you, Eddie, on this series? Any final parting wishes?
It makes me very excited for another Captain America movie. Like I want to see a full fledged Sam Wilson Captain America movie.
We needed this. We needed this because if we would have gone straight into he has the shield, it would have been a lot like what happened with John Walker, where they just gave him the shield and thrust him out there, and we didn't have the empathy and the intrigue that we would have.
Right.
Now it's like, okay, we fully seen Sam given him his apex moment. It's like, I'm going to do a sports reference here. It's like when an NBA player goes off in the playoffs, the team might lose, but then next season you're like, okay, I'm invested. This guy took a jump this year. We're ready for round two in this character versus if they just suddenly are given the reins. But, Eddie, what's the next thing? I know that we kind of talked a little bit about the next things that are happening, but what are the shows that this series sets up for? I think they said four other MCU products or programs, movies, TV shows, something like that. Obviously, a Captain America 4 definitely sets that up. Is coming down the pipeline because of this series.
Yeah, you've got Black Widow, which is set to be released in July, and we already know that at least Val is going to have a crossover into that. We'll kind of see there. I'm assuming this will have a tie-in to maybe Loki. We'll see. because I know Loki's whole series is going to deal a lot with timeline, so they may steer clear of this. I don't know. But then you also have, what is the, oh, the Hawkeye series. And so I think that's going to be the one that we feel some connection to. But there's a lot coming out with Marvel. Like, they are just going to start pumping things out.
A couple other things that is a little bit more tightly connected to the events happening here. Like we said, there's potentially a MCU Suicide Squad style show with either Dark Avengers or the Thunderbolts, I think is what you had mentioned, with some of the people that are in the raft, one of which is Zemo. Maybe, who knows, maybe John Walker, the U.S. agent, is the one leading them. Who knows what could happen in that. Also, Young Avengers. We've now been introduced to a lot of people that are going to be potential Young Avengers.
Isaiah Bradley's nephew.
Isaiah Bradley's nephew. We've got Hawkeye. We have the sons of Wanda. Wanda's kids, if she can get them back. There is also Ant-Man's daughter is also potentially a part of these Young Avengers. Yep. So there's this kind of, I don't know if this finishes introducing some of those characters, but now they have an opportunity to come together. Also, who knows what will happen with the one-off stuff with Val, how she goes back and forth. Who knows, is Sharon Carter's character going to be a bigger part of overall, or is she just going to be in the Captain America 4 series? But it seems to me like whatever happens to Captain America 4, it's going to be still, I'm guessing Bucky is going to be a part of it. He seems to be like a part of the family now on that side of the equation, as well as the new Falcon, whenever, Danny Ramirez playing Joaquin is in there. But that's it. That's our review of not the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. It's Captain America and the Winter Soldier. That is the real title of it.
You loved that, right?
I thought it earned it.
That is a great way to say that.
Eddie, it did the work. So that's it for us. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Honey, We Made a Disney Podcast. Please go to our website and you can check out all the other movies that we are going to be doing, except for the times when we do things like this, where we just kind of say,
surprise
on everything. Surprise. We're going to go review something that's Disney related. But speaking of Disney related, I know that we teased this on the last one, but Eddie, what is the next movie we are finally going to review next?
We're looking at Pocahontas.
Other than this past series, we're in an Indian themed stretch here where we said no to Squanto, did Man in the House, and now we're doing Pocahontas. We can't get away. This was 1995. Everyone was talking about was Native American culture. So that's it. Thanks for listening to another episode.